This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week's episode was recorded on January 3rd, 2016. On this week's episode, Kate Scotchless, Nick White, and I, Mike Rappin, discussed the comics we read recently and what books we're excited for this week. This week's focus was on our comic book New Year's resolutions, but turned into a discussion about what we're looking forward to in 2016. Before we start the show, I want to thank everyone who filled out our listener survey over the past month. Expect some comics to be coming your way in the next week or two. Your feedback was amazing, and we hope it'll make the show even better. And now, this week's episode. This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I am your host, Mike Rappin, editor-in-chief for Destroy the Cyborg. With me this week are two amazing human beings, Nick White.
Hey.
And Kate Scotchless.
Hello.
Thank you guys for joining me this week. I'm super excited. It's 2016. We didn't do any kind of wrap-up last week because who cares about 2015? All that matters is 2016. So...
That's
how
what I've always
doing?
Told people.
Right, yeah. How have comic books been for you guys? How has everything been for you? How's your 2016 so far?
2016 isn't bad, considering we're only a couple days in. I managed to start plowing through some Irredeemable and some other books in the Boom Bundle, and been reading quite a bit, to be honest.
My 2016 so far has been dark because I have been, I'm on this streak, man, of like Black Magic, Red Thorn, Clean Room, all these, you know.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's been kind of intense. And then I switch to reading books that are lighthearted and funny and feel a little better about the world. So.
Oh, slow it down, Two-Face. That's insane. Well, speaking of things that we've all read, what have you guys been reading? So Black Magic, Red Thorn, Clean Room. What's up with those books? I've only read Black Magic.
Okay, so you know how amazing Black Magic is.
Yes.
Red Thorn, I had and still have high hopes for it, but it hasn't really hit its stride yet.
Okay.
So we just got issue 2, and it spent a lot of time recapping issue number 1, which I'm not really a fan of when they do it within the comic. I mean, give me a thing at the front and then move on.
What do you think this is, Marvel?
So, yeah. Wait, hold on. What is this Red Thorn book even about? I've never heard of anything about it. Is this one of those Vertigo, like, new dark crazy stuff
yeah,
that they're doing?
Yeah,
or is this
yeah.
another publisher?
This okay. is Vertigo, which I'm a fan of Vertigo dark crazy. Like, give me old school mm-hmm. Hellblazer any day.
Right, right.
So that's what I was hoping it was going to be like. It was pitched as being very Sandman-y, which you can tell it's trying to be, but it's not
okay.
not there yet. It's definitely pretty dialogue heavy right now, which I'm okay with, but they do a lot of telling instead of showing with, I don't know what the technical term is for it, but I always think of them as the voiceover boxes where you get the internal monologue. And
oh, yeah. okay.
right
yeah,
now
yeah.
they're pretty tied up in using those to tell things about characters instead of showing them within the action of the story.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's not working, but again, we're only 2 issues in, so maybe they'll hit their stride. The
okay.
story itself is about, we're in modern day Scotland, and this girl, Isla, has discovered that she has the power that when she draws things, they come to life. And it's one of these modern day occultism, turns out myths are real. She has unintentionally brought back from imprisonment in the underworld a demigod who is now causing all sorts of trouble.
So she drew this thing to life, and now it is... wreaking havoc on modern day Scotland.
Exactly, pretty much. So he's just emerged in issue 2, she didn't create him. She reinvigorated him. Somehow her drawings were feeding him. And we've figured out that her sister, who disappeared, she was born 9 months after her sister disappeared, so she never met her.
Okay.
Also had this power and was drawing the same demigod, and they both didn't know why. And so there's this whole mystery. She originally goes to Scotland to try and figure out what happened to this disappeared sister, and in the process finds all sorts of things. I don't want to spoil stuff, so.
Okay. That sounds like a wild ride.
Yeah,
for
the
one,
art is
one
really
is
solid.
Two issues? Okay.
The other thing is, even though we have tons of like heavy dialogue, sometimes they fail to mention pretty important stuff. Like, there was a year time jump in this last issue, but it was really unclear that there was a year time jump, so they're like, there's some comment about this guy being her boyfriend. I'm like, wait, you just met. Oh wait, no. There was a little tiny random thing indicating that that was a year ago.
Like
so.
a small clock in the bottom right.
I don't know. It was one of those things where you turn back pages a couple times in the same issue and you're like, wait, what?
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm hoping it hits its stride. It's a cool concept.
Okay. So you're giving it like an arc or so to maybe catch up with itself? All right.
In general, I do 3-issue rule where I don't judge until the 3rd issue.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Very interesting. We are much quicker to judge on this podcast, I think.
Yeah, some things just need time to hit their stride.
Yeah, I get
especially that. Things that need to do a lot of world building. You know, give it a chance.
Okay.
Mike knows how to give out the free pass on that. Just ask him about what is it, the Hickman book.
Oh well, okay, Jonathan East Hickman at this point. Yeah, I give him like 20 pass. Issues. Like. Yeah. Warren Ellis too. He's the type of writer that I'm just like, well, I'll give you 6 to 15 issues. You know,
Mike's like, before Mike's I give like when trade number 4 rolls out, maybe we'll revisit this at trade number 4. You know,
yeah.
let's check in 2 years on this book.
Yeah. So in Clean Room number 3, you said, what's up with that book? I know about this book and I hear a lot of praise for it on Twitter, but I don't know much about it.
Mike, what is up with this book? What?
Oh, okay.
What is up? This is one where, like, it's a really cool concept, but man, I need to, like, reread them all back to back because when I've been reading them, like, a month apart, I am so lost.
One of those? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's the worst.
Yeah. And, like, I was really on it for 1 and 2, and then I read 3, and I'm like, wait, I'm confused who this person is and this person. I think, now don't quote me on this. I think the general premise that we have right now is that your inner demons are literal inner demons, and this woman is trying to exorcise them or contact them in some way and has found a way, but it is sloppy enough that people keep offing themselves because she has empowered their inner demons so much or something. I don't know. It's weird.
What?
Like an inner demon life coach?
Yeah. Like, in this clean room is the way, like,
believe in you.
It's a science fiction-y kind of, it's a device slash room, like Cerebro, where she can go in and access, she goes in there with the person and, like, accesses their inner workings.
Hold on, you said Cerebro, you've got my attention.
I right? knew it.
Okay, so we go into this all-white room, we put our subject on the table, we go into their mind.
Gotcha.
We wear weird spandexy suits to do it because that's important.
Gotcha. So this is a Kieran Gillen book?
It is a Gail Simone book, which is how I got on board with it.
Right. Okay, I thought the name sounded familiar. That's what it was. Okay. So all the praise that I'm seeing on Twitter is just Gail Simone retweeting people saying, this book is so good. So this is issue number 3 you read. So are you on the fence still? Are you going to keep reading?
I'm definitely keeping reading. I want to go back and read them all back to back. In retrospect, I do this a lot where I'm like, oh man, I should have done this in trade instead of issues. I think this is one of those books that will work a lot better when you read it all in one chunk for a story arc. Just because, like I said, it's pretty complex to then leave a month in between and then go, wait, what?
Gotcha. Well, you know, I actually realized, Kate, that we're this far into the episode. I'm an idiot. I didn't ask you to tell us about yourself. I just jumped right into the podcast. So could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. My name's Kate. I live in Michigan. I met you, Mike, for people listening, when I was the president of my university's comic book club and was looking for speakers to come talk to us, our little band of nerds about comics.
Yeah.
And it was your old club, so that was pretty exciting. And I have since graduated, but I have heard rumors that they are going to contact you again this semester.
High fives.
You were quite popular.
That's awesome.
Don't stroke that ego.
Yeah. No, keep going. Okay, tell me how
really really,
they,
really
they
just want to invite them back so they can trash on and X-Men, but not, no, what's the one? Cyclops, yeah. That unpopular opinion
they
there you
challenge
had.
Me. Okay.
So they need to, they've gathered their thoughts, and now they need to articulate how awful he is to you.
This is just going to be a straight-up debate with me on the giant picture in
right?
the room. It's
right?
Big Brother looking down. It'll be fun. That sounds
no,
like a fantastic
children.
Time.
No, children, no.
Yeah.
They're like, we want to talk about how dumb Gambit is, too. And Mike's like, oh, my God.
He just hangs up. This is over.
Slams the computer shut.
Just over and over, yeah. Yeah.
This club is disbanded.
Yeah, well, okay, I'm super glad that you're here. I'm sorry I didn't do your intro earlier. That's totally on me. But, Nick, what's up with you? Thank you, thank you guys for being here and all that stuff, as usual. I mean, things are all out of order this week. You know, we had Christmas and New Year's, and now I just don't understand how this podcast is going to go. Yeah, he's going to be so mad. Nick, what'd you read this week? What did you read this week?
Well, Mike, like I said, I got that Boom bundle, and usually I try to look for something I can really sink my teeth into, and I read the first couple volumes of Irredeemable by Mark Waid. It's an interesting book. I really like the elevator pitch, which is the idea that, well, all sorts of people in theory could end up with superpowers, but the question is, what sort of people are in the right state of mind, or are mentally stable, or morally stable individuals to actually, with great power comes great responsibility, so on and whatnot. Let's just, bludgeon that to death. But it's an interesting idea. And what if you give someone, especially in the case of this book, someone who basically has near Superman abilities, you bestow these upon him, but he's definitely got some psychological quirks and maybe not the best upbringing, etc., etc., and what's the fallout from that? And I think what's really interesting, and I don't know if this is true of most Mark Waid works, which I've read very little of, but the way he's writing this book, he is like world building from day one at a pace that it almost feels like he knows he's got like 10 volumes ahead of him. He's like, I can get away with this, and I'm going to build up these little side characters for this whole issue. Not even like going to do a side story about them. They're going to occupy the whole issue, and we'll get back to the protagonist, maybe even not even next issue. But it's very rare. It's very weird to see that sort of confidence, but I wouldn't be surprised if, considering that this is Waid signing a deal with Boom Comics, that Boom more or less probably right off the bat said, you've probably got at least 20 issues to work out.
This book, I fell in love with this book when it first came out, and oh man, I was basically, the way that it was pitched, I think, in the previews book was, what if Superman went crazy and decided to destroy the world? We've gotten those books before, but Mark Waid's take on it is
this is so much more nuanced than that elevator pitch.
Yeah.
In a way, I don't know why, maybe just having seen Star Wars The Force Awakens, whenever I read this character, I think of, like, Kylo Ren. There's that, like, sense of entitlement in him.
Hold up. If you spoil Star Wars for me, I will track you down in person.
Okay.
You haven't seen Star Wars.
Oh, man. I've tried two different times to go to the theater and see it, and both times it was sold out. So this week, this is my week.
That's what I was going to say. Like,
how have you survived on the internet?
I haven't. That's what I'm saying. I have had to sequester myself.
Yeah, Kate, I mean, you're sort of verging on, like, Mike, what did we agree? There's like, you have like a month, and then we feel like this movie is like open season. Fair game.
Well, of course, we think that. Apparently, the rest of the internet doesn't care. I've seen straight up like articles with the titles with major spoilers of the whole movie, and I'm just like, holy shit, BuzzFeed, holy shit, The Verge. Like, I can't believe you would do that to people.
But, yeah, exactly.
Anyway,
I'll leave it at that.
So when you see this movie, Kate, you will understand.
You'll understand. Okay. Or maybe you'll say, I saw the movie, and Nick's completely wrong, which is totally possible.
That happens, yeah.
Yeah, happens to me.
What else did you read this week, Nick?
I read Art Ops 3 yesterday. Oh, man. Like, this new wave of Vertigo for me, not all of it is completely doing it. I realize they're sort of post-Fables now, and they're trying to sink their teeth into some more books that'll be more stable for the long haul. And not all of them are really in my wheelhouse. Sandman Overture.
Yeah.
But Art Ops, oh man, my goodness. Like, I think we've reached a point with 3 where Mike Allred is not doing all of the art, just some. Yeah. And unfortunately, you can kind of see the other guy is clearly trying to copy Allred. Like, not even like they're having one guy do like the present sections and the other guy does the elements of the book that are in the past or whatever. It's clearly just one ongoing book where at some points and at certain pages they switch. And
Well, I think Mike Allred is like, he's like edging back towards Marvel because Silver Surfer is starting up pretty soon. The new Silver Surfer series is going to be starting. Yeah. So, well, I wouldn't be surprised if that's what's happening.
It's hard to get this guy for more than a couple issues. I mean, let's be honest. So you take what you can get, and the other guy is a pretty, you know, good imitator. And I love this book. I love the premise, the idea that paintings have like stand-ins, or just like people have body doubles essentially, and so you have to protect the original painting, or you have to like remove it from the painting, and then it can sort of roam around the world as a living, breathing entity. So the Mona Lisa was extricated from a painting a while ago, and now she's the lead singer of a punk rock band in New York, and it's so goofy.
It's like the Harry Potter portraits, but more crazy.
I never thought of that. But they can come out of the paintings is the idea.
Sure. I haven't seen those movies. I mean, I guess I read the books a billion years ago, but...
You're hurting me, Nick.
We've gone into Harry Potter a couple times on this show, and Nick, don't get Nick started, because he'll talk about how he has this copy of Harry Potter, or number one, that it's doesn't even have the year label on it, because it was before Harry Potter was cool.
This is right. This is true. All of that is true. I
just don't want to open that Pandora's box again, you know?
Mike just doesn't want me to open the box. Mike is more than perfectly capable of recounting the narrative himself. Yeah. I love it. Art Ops is wacky and zany. The art is beautiful. It's classic, typical Mike Allred. I love it. It's fantastic. I can't recommend that book enough. The only other one I'd say that was of major note was I actually got around to reading Bloodshot Reborn 9, which is technically the conclusion to the second arc called The Hunt, but more or less it's actually the end of the big oversized arc. I would say 1 to 9 more or less comprises a huge overarching arc, if you will.
Gotcha.
And it sort of provides closure to that. You sort of learn and understand finally, like, what's the deal with Blood Squirt? What's the deal with Kay? Are they real? Are they an illusion? Are they a mirage? Are they being powered by the nanites, et cetera, et cetera? And they set some very... It didn't really surprise me in terms of an ending, but they do set some very basic little breadcrumbs here and there for where the book is going to go after the next arc being that weird Mad Max sort of one that's going to be 30 years in the future. So,
wow.
Yeah. Valiant's got plans, what can I say?
They always have plans on plans on plans.
On plans
somehow.
On plans. So I'm really excited to see Bloodshot goes Mad Max. I think that'll be fantastic. What about you, Mike? What have you been reading?
Well, last night, since I've been entertaining a friend of mine who was visiting, so I haven't had a lot of time to read comics, but I did manage to sit down last night and read Jughead number 2 and 3, and that book should basically just be called, you know, Jughead... featuring Chip Zdarsky making all sorts of fun of, or basically putting Jughead in weird alternate storyline fictions while he's asleep. Because that's essentially what issues 2 and 3 were, where Jughead falls asleep and then he like gets transported into like Game of Thrones world, or he gets transported into the future sci-fi world, or gets transported to another world where everyone's in a robot. And it's really wild. It's funny, but I'm like, whereas the story is very, very slowly developing. It's like he could have told the actual story of what's happening to Jughead in like an issue, but instead it's getting stretched out with all these little filler things that are just comedy. And I'm kind of okay with that, because there isn't a lot to the Jughead character as far as like the whole Archie world goes and what's happening in the story. So with these little asides and these little like jokes between him and Archie, and if you're reading the Archie book side by side, it actually makes everything way funnier. So since I am reading them side by side, it's actually a very enjoyable read. And I really like it. It's a pretty fun book. I also read Lazarus number 21. I won't say anything else other than this book is fantastic and Lazarus is amazing, period. Despite what Paul thinks. So
yeah, Paul.
I will always
even when you're not
this.
Here, we're going to talk about this.
This is a free country. He's allowed to be wrong.
But the big thing that I read that I was actually very, very impressed by was Rick and Morty number 1. And I know that this book came out a while ago, but it was on sale. I bought Rick and Morty 1 through 4 this weekend because they were all on sale for $1 each. And so I read number 1, and I was very impressed with it in the sense that I don't really like to read franchise books. We've talked about this before on another episode, that I just don't like to read books that have a license, you know, thing, because then there's all sorts of weird things that go into it, like how does it tie into the show, and there's all these things that you have to keep yourself constrained to, or at least that's how it works in my mind. And so Rick and Morty number one was just like another episode of Rick and Morty. And I'm okay with that because I am dying on the inside after the end of season two. And I need more Rick and Morty. So this is a really like refreshing read. And I have their voices in my head and I have the stutters. And they write the stutters out in the dialogue boxes. And it just blows my mind. So if you haven't seen Rick and Morty, maybe this book won't do it for you. Because they don't even in number one, they don't even try to explain the premise. They just go into it thinking, you've seen the show, you know how this works, this is just another adventure with Rick and Morty. And I'm 100% okay with that. I love this book. It was way funny. I plan on probably reading the rest and then grabbing maybe trades after that or something like that. It's a very, very fun book. Have you guys read, and Nick, I know you read this. Kate, have you read any of this, or do you watch Rick and Morty or anything?
So I finally gave into peer pressure and watched Rick and Morty for the first time. Like during exam week, this past, like, and watched like five episodes. And so first of all, I totally thought this whole time my friend was pressuring me to watch this, that this was like a SpongeBob kind of thing, like a kid's cartoon. So the first episode, I was like, oh wait, this is not at all what I expected. And it was funny, but mostly, so I'm not big on TV to begin with, and I'm extra not big on cartoons. They just don't grab me so much. When I do watch TV, it's usually, I don't know, more drama stuff.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
But I really don't watch much TV, and so like it didn't do a lot for me. The first episode was like funny just because I was like, oh man, this is not at all what I expected. But yeah, that's... I don't know. I'm not good at reviewing TV stuff because it's just not my thing.
So, but what did you think of the show? You watched five episodes. I mean,
they're really short. I mean, yeah, it's funny. It's, I don't know. It's TV.
It's okay to say it's not your thing. We won't be that.
Yeah, that's
you,
okay.
I promise.
Possibly.
No, for real. Like, it was very, like, it was funny. See, I come off as weird like this. I was one of those kids that was raised, like, allowed to watch an hour of TV a week kind of thing. And so I've always just been way more into reading, which is how I got into comics, is I read books and comic books and all that stuff. But TV generally
reread comics
do it
too,
for me.
So
I don't want to, like, bash on the show because it was good as shows go, but, yeah.
Okay. No, that's all right. The comic is fun if you like the show, I think. That's pretty much what I was trying to get at.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Nick, I'm glad that you told me that I should read it and all that jazz.
Yeah, it's all right. I get that a lot.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Well, you know, since, you know, comic books come out this week on the 6th, what are you guys excited for this week? What are you super excited for to read this week? Out of all the amazing books that are coming out at the start of 2016, I can't stop saying that. What are you guys excited for?
I will hit us off with this one. Vision number 3.
Go for it.
This book has blown me away. Like, I completely didn't expect to love this book, and I love this book. So I picked up issue 1 entirely based on Del Mundo's cover, because Del Mundo, come on. And didn't expect much. I'm not much of a capes person. I have never read a Vision series. And so I got it, and it is super good. So the story's by Tom King, who I've heard you guys talking about loving the Omega Men. He's doing that right now, too.
Yeah.
And
Grayson.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And he's writing this story about the Vision. He's separate from the Avengers. Now he's like a liaison in the White House. And so he's built himself this synthesoid family with a wife and a daughter and son, and gotten himself, you know, the little suburban house with a white picket fence, and is trying so hard to be normal. But of
this
course,
doesn't sound very normal.
But of course, this
the
doesn't.
The robot must assimilate.
This doesn't work, and the harder he holds on to it, the more it slips through his fingers. And so you have supervillains showing up and neighbors. It's amazing. And we keep getting these little foreshadowing breadcrumbs about, you know, after a little conversation will happen, it'll be, say, something like, so-and-so will, in the future, die in a fire that Vision starts, you know, something like that. So we're building up to this climax of when the whole thing falls apart, and just watching issue by issue as his world that he's created is crumbling.
Huh.
It's just so, I don't know, it strikes a chord for me, I guess.
So is this like a comedy book, or is
no,
it?
No.
Oh, so it's like a straight up superhero say, like, book.
Is
okay.
it all like domestic? Is it all it like is... him at home, or does it reach a point where he goes out and shoots people with lasers? Or
yeah,
something?
No, we have none of that so far. We have him trying real hard to be domestic all-American, and mm-hmm. unfortunately the past and his work and what he is and even what his kids and wife are keep slipping through no matter how hard he tries. So he wants these two teens to be, you know, super normal. He makes them go to high school. But of course you put a synthesoid in high school and it doesn't go normally, you know what I mean? So yeah. You know, your kid gets mad and picks someone up by the throat. Like,
oh god. Okay.
Yeah, does not compute.
Nice.
And so we've had the Grim Reaper shows up in issue 2 and causes problems.
Is that a Marvel thing? Is this a Marvel thing?
Okay, so Grim Reaper's brother is the guy that the Vision's made from, if you will.
Okay.
So he's really upset that Vision is basically trying to play off these people as family, like that they're the Grim Reaper's family. It's like, no, you're not real. These people aren't my family. None of this is real. And he just keeps repeating, you are not real, you are not real.
Wow.
Yeah, it's intense. It's intense. And the art's just like completely on point, and the pacing is perfect, and I am super ready for this book.
So did you say Mike Del Mundo does the interiors for this?
No, he does the covers. Interiors
he does the cover. Okay,
are
okay.
Gabriel Hernandez-Walta.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Okay. This sounds like the most absurd. Like, I remember seeing covers for this book and thinking, oh, this looks kind of corny and cheesy.
Yeah,
like,
no.
But it sounds like it's super dark.
It
like,
is, surprisingly. And it's intense. Okay. Like, yeah. It questions the whole, like, what's the value of normal and is it worth trying for? And can you really. Can he really have this thing he wants, and should he even be trying for it? And yeah. It's,
and are we human or are we dancer?
What makes you, yeah, what makes you human? There's dialogue between him and his wife that is very like, stuff like, well, she's not, you know, that's not logical. And he's like, well, but we're not going for logical because that's what my creator would do. And so we're going for illogical, and that's the human way. And I don't know. It's.
This yeah. sounds huh. I this sounds like you're selling me on this
you
book.
You gotta
super
read it.
Hard.
Mike. You gotta read it.
I might have to try it.
This is one of those books where I hope those people that like saw Age of Ultron and they're like, "Oh, Vision is pretty cool. I can't wait to read this." And then they like read it and they're like, "What?
What? Yeah."
Yeah.
I love those moments. Oh yeah, action adventure. He was pretty cool. He used Thor's hammer. I hope he does that in this book. Oh boy.
Wow. Well, I definitely will have to try at least number one on this then, if I can get it for relatively cheap. But yeah, Nick, what did you read this week? Or should I say, what are you excited for
my
this
pick?
Week? Yeah, what's your pick? I'm sorry.
It's going to be Fade Out number 12, which is the last issue
oh my
of
gosh.
Fade Out by What's-His-Face and What's-His-Face.
Ed Brubaker
and
Sean
Phillips.
Phillips.
I, for some reason, Elizabeth Britweiser on colors was the only name that immediately came
to
mind.
She's the most important person in that book, as far as I'm concerned.
You know?
Her colors are too good.
I agree. You know, I was going to say, I'm going to step out on a limb and say it, but now that I've got your backing, I think I'll feel more confident in saying, yeah, the colors are probably the best part of this book.
Yeah.
Can I just say, after listening to you guys talk about this book over and over, week after week, I went ahead and picked up volume 1 and am excited mm-hmm. to read this. So you sold me. You sold me.
Good. Okay. I'm happy to hear that. Yeah.
No, I, the ending of 11, I pretty much saw coming right away. I even basically, a couple issues back, I was like, this is probably going to happen.
Yeah.
But as for 12, I have no idea where this book is going to go. I have no idea what, like, this book has gone on so many weird open-ended things here and there and here and there that I don't even know what would define closure for this book.
Yeah, I feel the same
way. I know that it will probably not be a happy ending.
To say the least, yeah.
I am very convinced of that. But beyond that, like, there are so many loose ends and unresolved issues, and it's a book that doesn't tend to kill off characters. So in terms of who could, you know, slink back into the book for the last issue, I have no idea. And I know in the past I said, well, it seems like this book could have gone on for much longer. Why are we cutting it short at 12? Did something happen? Is it not selling that well? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But with 10 and 11, I don't know. It feels like it's sort of reaching that exact point where just a little bit longer, it might run a little long in the tooth. So I do think they are closing this right about at the right point for me, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, that was almost my pick this week. I was feeling the exact same way about it. So, Kate, we will refrain from saying anything else so that you can catch up and read the second, you know, read the first trade, yeah, and then when the second drops, buy that as well. Because it's a very, very solid book. Like, there was some twists and turns that are kind of weird in the second arc, but once you get, like Nick is saying, to the end, it all starts to pay off and really starts to come together.
Okay.
But yeah, so for my pick this week, I am super duper excited for Bitch Planet number 6, because this book needs to come out every other week, but instead it comes out like every other month, and mm-hmm, which is okay. I'm totally willing to wait, but this issue, if I'm not mistaken, is another one-off issue, so it's going to be about one of the women that are in the jail, or in Bitch Planet, I guess, and focusing on their backstory, so that'll be really interesting to read. I don't believe Val Delandro's on art. I believe it's someone else whose name I didn't look up because I'm a jerk.
But if it's a one-off, it almost certainly is, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just really excited to have this book back in my life. Like I said, I want it to come out every other week, but I wish that it could just get back on a monthly schedule, and I'm hoping, right, with 2016 that will happen. Yeah, but really,
good luck.
Yeah. Really, I am also just curious to hear, like, see the backstory for a lot of these, or for more of the characters. And yeah, with the way that issue 5 ended in, like, a very rough and, like, harsh ending, like, I can't even explain where this book is going to go next. And so this one-off will be, like, a nice, slow reintroduction to the series to see, okay, now things are real dark and real crazy. So, yeah, that's pretty much all I can say about it, knowing almost nothing about it off the top of my head. So it's just going to be a good book.
Yeah, that book has that unique problem of being very much in demand. Everyone really wants to read it. Everyone's very eager to read it. It's one of those books that when you get it in your poll, it's probably the first thing you read or the second thing you read. But despite that, the schedule for this book is just all over the board. And I get that at some point, Kelly Sue DeConnick apparently felt that the story was headed to the wrong direction or headed to the wrong conclusion, and decided at that point to totally reinvent that arc. And I know that delayed a bunch of things. But you're right. It does feel like it really literally is every other month. I don't know why we don't have Delandro every month as well. I wouldn't say his art looks like it's like a J.H. Williams time-consuming sort of issue going on, but I don't want to make assumptions about that. But again, it's sort of got that whole Southern Bastard schedule going on, where it's like 2 months on, 1 month off, 3 months on, 2 months off.
Yeah.
Welcome to Image.
See, I have solved this problem for myself by reading this book in trade.
Yeah. I think that's how a lot of people are reading it, actually.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I gave up and just, I'm like, whatever, I'll do trade.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think this book probably reads really well in trade
as
well.
Yeah.
So I don't see a problem, but I'm one of those people that I need this comic and I need it now, damn it. So
delayed gratification is not your strong suit.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of them, for some books I can wait, but like for instance, you know, Manhattan Projects, I'm one of those, I'm a waiter. I will wait for that book because I don't think I could keep track of it month to month.
Yeah.
But like Bitch Planet, I have all these characters, like they are all registered in my heart, and I am ready to just hear about the terrible things that Kelly Sue DeConnick is going to put them through, so I can be mad at the antagonists, you know. But I did look up the artist on this book. It's Taki Soma, who okay. is a creator I don't believe I've ever seen before, but, you know, she has a very unique art style, you know, as all of the one-off characters tend to do. But it's very cartoony in a way, and I'm really interested to see how they're going to apply that to this book. It almost looks like a more brightly colored version of what Valentine Delandro's been doing. And so I'm, again, really curious to see how this plays out, since this is a one-off about the one of the characters. So, yeah, it's going to be a good book. I mean, there's nothing more to be said other than Bitch Planet's going to be good. It's just a matter of get the book to me as soon as possible, please. So as I said, it's 2016. In case you're listening to this and it's not 2016 somehow, it's 2016 as of today. And now that we're thinking about, you know, what's coming out this year, what we're excited for and all this stuff, like, what are your comic book New Year's resolutions in terms of what you want to read, what you want to try to do more of, what you want to try to do less of? I'm sure we all want to try to spend a little less money, but even though we want to say that, it's probably not going to happen.
It's a noble goal.
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, I want to lose 20 pounds this year. It's like, eh, maybe you won't. Maybe you will. We'll see. But as far as comic books go, you know, what are you guys looking forward to? What are you going to try to do in 2016 as far as comics are concerned?
I'm definitely going to try and read more of the classic stuff. Part of that is based entirely on, like we were saying, spending less money. I can do this through the library.
Yeah.
Michigan, which is where I live, has recently redone their interlibrary loan database system. And so it's back online, which means I can start requesting these things from all over the state. So I want to finish up reading. Yeah. Yeah. It was really sad for me when it was actually kind of a beautiful twist of fate, though, that their server request system went down right before my final exams for my last semester of college. So it was kind of the gods were like, listen, Kate, you need to do this. So now they're back. And I want to finish up, I've only read volumes 1 and 2 of Sandman, so I want to finish that. I want to read more of Hellblazer, the original stuff. I've only read Watchmen, but there's like a billion other trades of that I'm kind of interested in looking into.
Oh, you're talking about the before Watchmen stuff?
Watchmen.
Yeah.
And there's some, like, the real classic-y stuff that everyone's supposed to have read, but I haven't, like V for Vendetta. I can't believe I just admitted that to strangers, but yeah, it's true. It's true.
I mean, that's okay, because V for Vendetta is good. It's a little long, but, you know, it's like Watchmen in a way where it's telling a big, big story, mm-hmm. So it'll probably take you a couple of reads, at least, or a couple of sittings to actually finish it. At least that's what it did for me. It was just a lot to take in. So, you know, you read a couple chapters, like 1 or 2 chapters, you sit down and you go, and think about it for a week, write an essay to yourself, and then, you know, pick it up and read some more.
See, and I love books like that. The real barrier for me with a lot of these has been the art, man. It's the dated art style stuff it's hard. I'm not a fan.
We're pampered.
It's
nowadays.
So true. Yeah. I keep telling my friend, I want them to redo like Hellblazer, Watchmen, those comics, exactly the same panels, exactly the same everything, except a new artist. I think it'd be amazing. I think it'd sell like hotcakes.
I think this is
Kate does not represent the iRead Comic Books podcast.
Is it too late? Can we just let's roll the footage? Can we get the filler in here? Yeah. Can we cut to a break? Can we?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll be back.
That'd be really interesting. I mean, I don't know how something like that would be received by the general comics community.
Oh, there would be outrage.
You don't even need to say
It'd
that.
Be great.
I can't even. You don't. Don't even say I don't know. I know how it would be received.
It'd be outrage. But the thing
burn
is,
you alive.
It's like, okay, so we redo classic movies all the time, right? It's no different. So you're getting a whole new fan base and more money. Come on, how could you not? How have they not done this already?
But is it about capitalism, or is it about the commentary on comic books that book is about, specifically Watchmen? We've talked about Watchmen a handful of times on this show, and I think that book does not need, for me at least, I don't think that that book would need to be remade, because it exists as a staple in what was the like 80s comics genre.
Cold War, it's embedded in the, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know how
historio-political, yeah.
And I'm not saying that wouldn't necessarily work, because, I mean, hey, if you could get more people to read Watchmen and understand what was happening, like, that's great. But at the same time, would that, I don't want to say ruin it, but would that, like, diminish the actual value of the book in terms of, like, what it was trying to do and what it was trying to say?
Well, you're not erasing the original. You're just getting another. So, like, I know Nick would love this. Give me some Ray Fox art in that book. And it's a totally different thing.
Okay. All right. Oh,
I just made an enemy.
I feel like
it's beautiful.
People are baiting me on this podcast now.
Yeah.
I think I'm being harassed. Well, I mean, first off, I think if you want to complain about old or dated art, I think Watchmen, maybe you've got less of a leg to stand on.
Yeah,
I think
no,
Dave
definitely
Gibbons
more
art
like
for
Hellblazer
that is pretty damn good.
Sandman.
Hellblazer's a little scratchy and Sandman. I don't know which version of Sandman you're reading, but they actually just remastered all of the color work for that book a couple years ago.
Oh, cool.
So
oh,
really? I don't know what version you've been reading, but most recently, and I'll send you a picture of my trades, but the version I have, they remastered the color work. So at least I'm guessing your complaints would not be totally fixed by that. It sounds like definitely there's some pencil and inking issues. But yeah, Sandman was remastered, and I think maybe with the latest version of the Hellblazer books that they rolled out, which I feel like mm-hmm. that definitely coincided with when Constantine was launched. I think the colors might have been redone there as well. So
wow, yeah, I hope that's out.
It's an interesting idea. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. Just flat out recreating the panels. I don't know if that's ever. Mike, has that ever been done, to your knowledge?
I'm trying to think. For one, Kate, to your point, I think that that's like a genius way to make more money off of a book.
Right?
But I can't even think of a time where someone has done that outside of like an homage.
Yeah.
You know, where they, you know, like for instance, that since I was telling you guys before we started the show, you know, I just reread the last issue of Dark Knight Returns, and there was that panel of Superman being struck by lightning, and I've seen that in a couple of books. That Rick recreated with different heroes and, mm-hmm. and different things.
Yeah.
But, like, that's just an homage to that, very iconic panel. It's not necessarily a recreation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and certainly things like literature that didn't begin in comics, we've seen those revisited multiple times.
Right.
True. Certain stories have been revisited. But in terms of something that actually began in comics, I think whether or not it has merit, and maybe to some extent it does... maybe it doesn't. I don't know how that's not going to be seen as blasphemy.
Oh, Kate, you're challenging my brain now. Like, my head hurts thinking about this.
Well, the whole point, though, is to get people who haven't been on board. So we don't care what you old readers think, right? Like, my problem, though, with the whole thing is if they then go so far as to try and just redo it, and I don't want them to change the writing or panels at all. Which I think is probably unlikely.
Isn't that kind of a slap to Dave Gibbons and saying, like, your art sucks?
It was good for the time. I mean, so much of the art back then was based on what paper they were using and, like, the quality. It's just...
Yeah, printing.
It's like redoing a cartoon in digital now that was hand-drawn before. Like, it's just a different medium at this point.
This is true. I can see that. That's very interesting. I never even considered that once in my entire life. So I'm like, I'm stuck at a loss of words here.
People would probably argue that given how much books get rebooted and revamped,
mm-hmm.
The idea that the story is going to eventually be retold by a different person or a different artist is inevitable anyway. I see what you're saying with you actually want a literal, like, if someone were to actually hand them the script of the issues and say, draw this verbatim.
Exactly. Yeah, because the writing is so flawless, you don't want anything to change.
Interesting.
Well, Mike and I have discussed this before. There's some weird coincidence that goes on or some collusion that happens where really weird out there, maybe even a little full of themselves, writers tend to work with artists that aren't always conventional. Like, even to this day, like, Grant Morrison working with Frank Quietly. Frank Quietly is not for everybody, clearly.
Yeah.
And some people would go so far as to say his art is, quote-unquote, bad, you know.
It's grotesque in a way, depending on... But I understand your point.
And if you look at a lot of the people Grant Morrison works with, if you look at a lot of the people that Alan Moore work with, they're always a little off, off kilter. That's not to say I don't like them.
They aren't your classic comic book style, is
they
what it is.
They are conventional house styles, off is the wrong term. I love From Hell, for the record. I mean, and that's drawn with just a classic, roller ballpoint pen. And that's all From Hell is drawn with, and...
That's on my to read list too for this. That to hell the Alan Moore Swamp Thing. There's so many of these classic things I really need to get on. So,
yeah, that sounds like you just need to read all of Alan Moore's backlog of books.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's my entire 2016. See you guys next year.
Okay. What about you, Nick? Are you got any 2016 resolutions?
Maybe one of the more loftier ones, which is sad considering how little work would actually need to be done to accomplish such, would be to actually put a Marvel book on my poll for the first time, ever. So, And for the record, everyone's going to be like, you just watch, Nick White's going to put Darth Vader on his pole, and ha 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 ha, great joke. We know you love Star Wars. It's true. It's true. But no, I'm talking like a real Marvel superhero, someone you'd maybe see in the movies, maybe you don't, et cetera, sort of book. And right now, it probably sounds like it's going to be Vision.
Heck yeah.
I love Tom King. I love Tom King. I think... He is just fantastic. If this book manages to sort of stand alone, sort of play in its own yard,
it totally does. I'm not reading any of the other stuff right now, and it's a solid story.
Okay, then that would probably be a good starting point for me. I always get anxious whether or not a book's gonna get looped into something else, and for the record, I think Marvel and DC unfortunately have made it very clear that you sort of have to pick a side unless your wallet has no end, because they make it, you know, not only financially unprofitable, but informationally, that's a word, just difficult to really get a foot in either camp, mm-hmm. and just basically get your toes wet and that's it. So we'll see. Otherwise, I mean,
you could always try, your old favorite team, Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino on Old Man Logan number one coming out this month. I mean,
you know, that would be a good idea. I'm a little scared that book sounds like it may or may not have some of that weird continuity.
Well, I'm certain
playing
that it does.
Into other things.
It's an X-Men book.
That's
man.
What's kind of scares me, because I mean, I love Andrea Sorrentino. Maybe I'll just buy the book and just cross out all of the word bubbles so I don't get confused or anything, and just look at the art. And that actually is sounding more and more like a pretty good idea to me, so I'll just write my own Old Man Logan story. that sounds very promising. Andrea Sorrentino, amazing penciler, shout out to him. Not that he needs my affirmation, but Kate, if you haven't read any stuff with him involved, let me see. iVampire, pretty much you'd have to go with iVampire, Green Arrow, or he's done some Old Man Logan stuff up to this point.
Yeah,
right,
he did
Mike?
The Brian Michael Bendis Old Man Logan run.
Okay.
For the six issues or something that they did.
So vampires or Green Arrow or more Logan.
Well,
I guess you
there's
can,
only
you can
room for
there.
One archer in my heart, and that's Hawkeye.
Oh man.
So,
okay.
One of those. Got it. Got it.
Yeah. So I think I don't know. I've heard you talk about iVampire before. I might check that out.
Yeah. It's a weird one. I mean, that was
weird's my jam.
That was like Joshua Hale Fieklov, or however you say it, before he got big. Mm-hmm. It was Sorrentino before he got big, and it was the New 52 back when they hadn't cut all of the weird stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a very special time before they were like, what are we doing? What's this Frankenstein book we've made? What is this? So speaking of the New 52, here's another interesting resolution that may or may not be happening for DC. I don't know if you've heard this rumor yet, Mike, but rumor has it, when they reach issue number 52 of the books that have been around since the beginning of the New 52,
mm-hmm.
rumor has it, everything's going to get renumbered and retitled.
Oh, I heard about that.
Sort of get rebooted.
Yeah, I heard rumors
about
that.
I don't know if that's all of the books that have made it that far, or if it's just everything at that point. Because, like, especially a book like Constantine the Hellblazer, for example, does not need that sort of a moment for it.
Does beating it ever stop them? Does it?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yeah. They're like, wait, would this be a bad place to do this? Would it? We don't care.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of New 52, my New Year's resolution, at least so far, has been to maybe go back and try and read some older stuff, but more importantly, to actually read the New 52 Batman. So, and if we're coming close to the 52 issues, I was thinking, you know, I could read one issue a week starting this week, and I could actually make it work throughout the whole year, you know, just slowly going through one issue a week. So it could be a thing, or, you know, reading an arc here and then take a month off, read another arc, so on and so forth, just to get through that series. Because I know everyone tells me, and I've been saying this since, like, I want to read it, but because everyone's been telling me to read it, but it's like always the last thing on my list, because it's like that's a whole big series, and if I get sucked in, then it's going to consume me, And I didn't, you know, after rereading the Frank Miller Batman, I realized that I do really like Batman stories, but I never have been able to commit to one. So maybe I'll just power, you know, and just, you know, get up the courage to actually sit down and read Court of Owls and get sucked into that whole thing and finally understand what, you know, Nick and Paul and everybody else has been telling me is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm just thinking your issue a week thing is completely unrealistic just because this is one of those series you get sucked into and you'll just want to binge read. Like, there goes your weekend.
Kate, you said you're not like a huge Capes fan.
I'm not at all. So the way I came to this was Witches. Scott Snyder's Witches.
Okay. Yeah.
Is like one of my all-time favorite books, and I was like, oh well, his big thing is Batman, and I was at the library and they had trade one of Court of Owls. I'm like, oh, this is gonna be garbage, but whatever. So Capes generally just don't do it for
this
me.
This is gonna be garbage.
And
this
especially is... Batman, his superpower is freaking being rich, right? And yeah. So I was just like, oh, whatever. And I read it. I'm like, this is amazing. And picked up, you know, yeah. issues two and or volumes two and three.
0 year.
Four was a weak one for me. I was not as big. But yeah, so it was very reminiscent of the feel and tone for me of Watchmen. Like, it's more of that mystery noir kind of story.
Exactly.
That's a proper Batman story. I mean, right? That's what Batman should be.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think what you should do is just take a weekend and know that this is going to be your weekend.
That's a lot of... Ooh, I don't
just
know if
read, catch up today.
In,
right? Because that's...
Maybe a couple weekends, but I get your point. I get your point.
Staggering it out, man. That's going to be a lot of self-control.
Yeah, well, I got a lot of X-Men books that tied me over. I'll be
okay,
that's
true,
you know?
That's true.
But,
Are you reading all the different X-Men books right now?
You are, aren't you?
I am. I think I'm reading all of them. I'm not reading Uncanny Avengers, but I did look at the solicits for January of Uncanny Avengers, and I saw that Gambit and Rogue are on the cover, and I'm like, damn it. I told myself I wasn't going to read that book when it came out because Rick Remender really disappointed me, and I was kind of bummed about that series, but I said, Gambit and Rogue, man, damn it. So I think I'm going to have to catch up and read that book too. But my plan is to read all the X-Men books when they come out. Like, a couple books of mine have dwindled away, or I dropped them, and now I have all this room for X-Men. So, I'm okay with it. Like, I knew this was coming. This is what was going to happen. The fate had been decided for me long ago, before Secret Wars even started. Like, I knew X-Men was going to go away, and I knew they were coming back, and I was going to be right there with them. So,
well, it sounds like you actually did some planning. Recently, I had to remind Jordan, at least in the last month or two, a friend of mine, Jordan, when Secret Wars started up, and he's like, well, I don't want any part in this. You know, of course, his pull dwindled quite a bit. And of course, for that month or two, he was going through the previews catalog, and he's like, well, my pull is really low, so let's add this, and let's add this, and, you know, this looks good. Jordan had forgotten about the whole, like, all new, all different, everything's going to come back, and you're going to have a metric buttload of books to pick from. So while Secret Wars was, you know, he's like, I don't want any of that shit. You know, he was picking all these different books from IDW and everything, and he's like, wow, my pull's getting really diversified, and now it's back up where it should be. And then all of a sudden, it's like, all new, all different, and he's like, oh, fuck, I forgot. So,
yeah.
Same thing happened to us DC people when we took 2 months off for Convergence, or as I call it, the 2 months of filler shit while they moved their offices from New York to L.A., Yeah, I don't care what anyone says. They're like, oh well, there might be some continuity stuff with Convergence. Not really.
Yeah.
Not unless you're into that Lois and Clark book they're doing now. So.
Yeah, I'm not big on events in general.
Yeah. Yeah. So in 2016, then, what are you guys looking forward to outside of, you know, your own New Year's resolutions? Are there things that, like, you want to see happen? Like, what are you excited for? Are there books coming out that you're like, yes, 2016 is going to be great because of this?
Totally.
Well, speaking of events, we're getting a Civil War movie.
Okay, yeah.
Isn't that this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Captain America book or movie. Yeah. That'll be exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I'm excited for all the merch and hype that comes with it because sales are a big deal.
Yeah.
So
you finally buy all of the Secret Wars or Civil War books.
Exactly. For cheap.
I really can't wait for all the merch to roll out and then see, like, no Black Widow stuff again. I eagerly anticipate that.
Oh my god.
That makes me so mad.
I can't wait for them to put a Captain America on her motorcycle again and all of those fun things. God. So
mm-hmm.
That's so awful.
Yeah, remember that time, like right now, when we have a Pizza Dog figurine but we still don't have a Kate Bishop?
Really?
It's so true. We have our Hawkeye stuff and you can get them with the Pizza Dog, but you can't get Kate Bishop. Still.
Really?
Wait.
Yeah, true story. So a friend of mine has a YouTube channel that's actually super popular that he does these live action or stop motion is what I mean. Stop motion videos with mm-hmm. superhero fights. And so he tracks when all these figurines are coming out. And so I have him on standby to let me know if we ever get a Kate Bishop.
No way.
Still don't. Yep.
Holy, I had no idea. That is like...
But we did get a Pizza Dog. That's their priorities right there, so...
But that makes no sense because, like, Pizza Dog and Kate Bishop were, like, a thing for a while. Like, that was
Thank you. At the very least, they could have given us, like, a set of them. Like, you get Pizza Dog and Kate Bishop.
No, you get Kate Bishop in her car with Pizza Dog sitting, like, in the passenger seat. Like, mm-hmm. how does that not sell well? Like,
I don't know.
Come on.
Marvel keeps doing this thing where they make me fall in love with a character and then they don't sell me merch for it. And it hurts me. To be fair, DC does it too. So...
So the moral of the story is the big two sucks. Just keep reading independent. The end. We'll see you all next week on I Read Comic Books.
It's pretty much par for the course here. No, I was actually going to say another thing with Kate Bishop I noticed. I don't know if either of you caught this, but correct me if I'm wrong. For a while there, when they sort of had the Kate Bishop issues and the Clint issues, they were still coming one after another, right? Like one issue would be Clint and then the next would be Kate. Because
They did a whole arc of basically just Kate.
Okay, because I was going to say, when the trades rolled out for the books, they actually put all of the Clint stories in one book and the Kate stories in another. I remember that. I thought that was kind of...
Well, that makes sense for reading if, like, in that
But it
order.
Also doesn't make sense from the, them. We know you actually don't care about this character perspective.
Yeah.
I get, maybe. Yeah. But away from the negative things, I mean, are there other things you're excited for in 2016?
Yeah, 4001 AD. Eagerly anticipating this book. It's going to debut with Free Comic Book Day, and it's going to possibly be...
And that's...
Never even heard of this. Tell me more.
Yeah, explain to Kate. I don't think she's been following this as much as I have vicariously through you.
Okay, well, 4001 AD is technically Valiant, has two kind of universes. They've got their one in the present, which... Who knows what they call that? I just call it the Valiant Verse. I coined that. It's trademarked via me. and then there's the 4001 AD universe, which is where all of their future characters are,
such as Rai.
When Valiant was around in the 90s, the 4001 AD universe was much more populated. As of right now, since they rebooted a year or two ago, the only character that's really in it is Rai. But it sounds like with this new book, it's going to start with Free Comic Book Day. Just simply called 4001 AD. I think we're actually going to see that universe get fleshed out quite a bit more, possibly have Eternal Warrior and some other characters in it, but it's the team from Rai, so at that point, it doesn't really matter what else happens. It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
So is this kind of a dystopic future?
Well, it's sort of a... It's a dichotomy of sorts. You have, on the Earth's surface, it's kind of like... They've gone back to the Stone Age, more or less. Civilization has attempted to reset itself, and then up in the sky, so on the ground, we've learned a little bit about that via Eternal Warrior, but then up in the sky, far up in the sky, and Mike knows more about this than I do, it's like, they call it, New Japan, and it's just floating, and it's this huge, this city that's just vertical. It's vertical for stories and stories and stories and stories and stories.
Yeah, there's something like 5,000 stories or something like that. It's insane. Yeah.
And it's so it's sort of the, the poor people are still on Earth and then this euphoric utopia is existing up in the sky. So yeah, it sounds a little like
it sounds a little dystopic
like,
to me.
Like whatchamacallit, the Matt Damon movie. What is that called?
What Matt Damon movie? I don't even know.
I know
it's
exactly
one with Jodie Foster, and she's with the rich people, and they live on that floating thing in the sky. And
the Jetsons.
No, this is the one done by the guy who did. Oh my goodness! Now I can't think of the other movie. What's the one?
Yeah. We'll be back in a moment while Nick figures this out.
The one where the guy goes to try to push the aliens out of those settlements they live in on Earth.
Oh, District 9?
Yeah, that's District 9. And the movie we're trying to think of, according to Google, is Elysium.
Elysium, yeah.
Elysium, oh yeah. I didn't see
it's
that.
Okay. Anyway, so it might be a bit like that. I think it is going to branch out the Valiant universe more. As long as they don't bite off more than they can chew, I'm always sort of nervously, whenever they make more announcements, I'm like, when are you guys going to make the step where you become really big and incorporate and I hate you?
And you have to question, how many books can Matt Kent really write? Because he's kind of like helming everything at this
right.
point.
Right. Kent and Charles Soule, I think, combined write like 48 books a month. if you were to tally it up, I do think they're around that number. But I wouldn't be surprised if when Rye will end and this book will begin. I would not be shocked if that's what happens.
Oh, no.
Look,
Nick, I don't
I'm
want
sorry.
That to happen,
like,
though.
Valiant is very much like they don't, you know, they don't like to flood the market. And usually around the 12 or the 25 issue mark, they just naturally end books. It's weird, but that's...
Yeah, and but they usually do come to pretty good conclusions in that respect.
Yeah.
So I guess I can't be that upset.
And your character always
goes
somewhere.
If 4001's going to be
good. I think that's the one thing I really like. When your Valiant book ends, your character does manage to find his way into something else. On the same note, we're getting Archer and Armstrong again next year. I think this book has been done for about maybe a year now, so we haven't seen these characters.
Mm-hmm.
But it's getting relaunched as A&A, because they're going to be clever and retitle it something different, right? Instead of Archer and Armstrong, it's just A&A. So, yeah, I don't know if there's any weird juvenile puns to be made about that one, but I'm sure there's something anyone can think of. And But I think the book is going to involve Armstrong falls into his satchel, and I don't know if you know about his satchel, but, like, he can pull things out of it, like, and it's, like, pulls into this portal universe or something like that. So he's always grabbing items out of it.
He has a bag of holding,
yeah,
is what
you're
saying.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of, too.
He has a D&D bag of holding. Okay. Great.
Yeah, well, not everybody can come up with unique stuff, and so that's coming back. I'm really excited about both of those. On the DC front, I'm really scared because, like I said, it sounds like we might have an imminent relaunch. I'm also super terrified because they made an announcement that it sounds like all of their big heavy hitter titles, and I don't mean like Batman and Superman. It sounds like it's going down the line to like Aquaman, Flash, Green Arrow. It sounds like they're actually going to go bi-monthly, which... No.
And by bi-monthly, you mean twice a month.
Yeah, exactly. Twice a month. Ugh. And I'm hoping Scott Snyder can just put his, you know, big, you know, Batman foot down and stomp this thing to death. Because that guy's got street cred. I don't know if you remember back when they wanted to make Batman a $5 book every month. Everybody complained on Twitter to Scott Snyder. And he's like, I'll see what I can do. And then it was a $4 book again. And it hasn't changed. So.
Yeah.
Scott Snyder, if you're listening, first off, wow. Second off, can we make this not happen, please? Like,
Gotcha. Well, yowza. I'm not really excited for 2016, only because I know that all my X-Men books are coming back, and they're already being poorly received, so we'll see if Marvel decides to just not publish X-Men books this year. I'm really worried. I mean, I'm excited that they're all coming back and that they're all doing, like, that there's going to be more X-Books, but it, you know, the shift seems to be towards Inhumans, and I don't know what's up with that.
Do you ever think they're going to successfully sell people on the Inhumans? Like, do they really think that's ever going to realistically be a thing, honestly?
I honestly think that Ms. Marvel is doing a really good job for them. Ms. Marvel as an Inhuman and her dealing with all the Inhuman stuff, I think is actually... convincing people that you should read that book and you should follow along with what's happening with the
Inhumans. Have they been slamming people, bludgeoning people in the head with the fact that she is one? Because that was news to me right there. I thought she was a mutant.
Yeah, same. I didn't know.
Oh, well, if you read the Ms. Marvel series before Secret Wars, which did have a pretty nice conclusion, I will say, all things considered with Secret Wars and all that stuff, it did have a very nice end of days like arc. And there was a whole arc about how Ms. Marvel's an Inhuman and how she needs to, you know, be with all the Inhumans, and then it turns out there was like a rogue Inhumans group and blah blah blah. And so it was very X-Men in a way, which I was like, oh, this is really cool. But at the same time, you know, they definitely made it obvious that she's an Inhuman and that she's very important in that regard, because she's being a hero and she's not just, you know, being an isolationist like a lot of the Inhumans have been for a very long time. So it was there. Like, it was present in the story. It wasn't the focus of the story, but it was present enough to say, if you want to know more about these characters, here are some other books you could read. So I think they did a pretty good job of trying to market it and saying, Ms. Marvel is going to be an independent story, but the Inhumans are a big part of that story.
Okay. So Inhumans are the whole Terrigen Mist thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The thing I don't get right now is they have their Inhumans being super anti-X-Men. You're a mutie. I'm like, wait, what's the difference between you guys? Like, one of you is genetic.
Well, okay, let's comic sit books, down and so let me tell you a story factions. About... There's really not a big difference.
Need to make sense. I mean, that's where I get annoyed. I'm like, okay.
There's a big, long history behind it. It would take a little bit of time.
Tell us about the X-Men. Things.
No. Oh, no. God, no. Don't open that book. That's...
Shut it down.
Yeah. So... Okay, so outside of the big two, though, or big three, I guess, in terms of value, are there any independent books you're looking forward to? Anything that's been announced that you're like, yeah, this creator is moving to Image or Boom or Oni, and they're going to be doing something unique? Have you guys heard anything about that you're excited for?
Oh, man, so not one that's coming out in 2016, but like we started at the very end of 2015 with this series from Boom called Snowblind, and it is amazing. We only have one issue. I don't
what
know
is
when
I've never heard
comes
of this.
Out. Oh my gosh, you guys. Okay. So again, if you give me all watercolors in a comic, I'll buy it. And so that's how I picked up this book originally, just going, ooh, pretty. It is a rural noir type story where this kid in, I want to say Alaska, but I'm not sure, is a teenager, and he is dealing with pretty strict parents and stuff and doesn't really know why. And he ends up sharing a picture of his dad on social media, and it comes out that, oh, actually his family, little did he know, is in witness protection.
Snap.
Right? And so this starts a whole series of events in motion that obviously you don't want to know because you want to read the book, because everyone should read this. But it is a story about coming of age, but also... You know, that's normally the age where you realize how human your parents are. But what if in the process of finding out your parents are normal, flawed humans, you find out, in fact, they are even more flawed, that there are dark things in the past.
Former mafia or
yeah.
What?
Well, we don't know. And the son doesn't know. And so it's this whole the struggle between them. And it's very atmospheric. And the pacing so far has been spot on. It is a miniseries. It's a 4-part deal. So I'm really, really looking forward to the rest of the series this year.
Cool. You're kind of selling me on the idea that it's a miniseries and beautiful watercolors and all that.
Yeah.
So I might have to look into that number one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Nick, anything from you? Have you heard any cool Image things that are coming out this year? Are we going to finally see anything that was announced at Image Expo last year?
I am pretty excited for that book whose title is, I think, Snowfall. I think it's the Joe Casey one.
I think I sent you the preview.
We don't really understand all of it at this point. So like, this is me extrapolating from the little preview, 2 or 3 pages we had. But it sounds like it's this future where I think in an attempt to deal with global warming and other weather issues, they've like the whole world has cracked down on temperature regulations and atmosphere regulations and such that like the police will arrest you if you know you violate these sorts of things. Mike, I don't know, did you see the preview at all, and did I send you those pages? Or
yeah, I remember seeing the cover for it, and I thought it was like a gorgeous cover, like what a striking cover. It's got like this person with a hood up with big red glasses or glowing eyes, and it's I can't for the life of me remember what it's actually called. I'm trying to look
it
up as we're
Snowfall,
talking.
Snowfall, isn't it? By Joe Casey, I think. And so they're regulating it super intensely, and you see like this police force going around the streets, and like they've got captions that are showing the readouts of their like machines where they're like current precipitation is 97 point blah 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 blah, and then all of a sudden there's this huge deviation and it starts snowing in this town, and the like the police force or whatever starts, you know, panicking, and they're trying to figure out what's going on, and of course the kids are loving it, but something's gone wrong. And then you see this character Mike was talking about that's on the cover, and I think they call him the White Wizard, which actually sounds like the KKK, so maybe that's not right. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it is that. You see him sort of sneaking off into the distance, and he gives the appearance of being like some sort of like a eco-terrorist of sorts, but yet everyone loves it because he makes it snow. Who knows? Again, this is what little I know.
An eco-nonconformist.
Yeah. So there's mystery there. I'm interested because I obviously haven't been able to fill in the gaps myself. So I'm really excited for that. A little bit more corporate, a little bit more of a bigger publisher on this note, but I'm also very excited because Dark Horse is actually going to give us another Aliens book.
Oh, Nick, you and your aliens.
Yeah, we're gonna get a new Aliens book called Aliens Defiance. I'm really excited because the artist on it, he hasn't done comic book art for a while, I think, but he's been doing a lot of concept art for movies, most recently Mad Max Fury Road.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm trying to remember who is actually writing that. It's Brian Wood. Oh, geez. Okay, there you go.
Oh, cool.
Brian Wood. Writing Aliens, which, who knows? That's, I mean, when was the last time we saw him doing, like, a franchise thing?
I don't think I've ever seen him do a franchise. Well, he did the Star Wars thing before Dark Horse.
Oh, you are so correct. You know, that's
turned
right.
it over.
That's
you right. know, Marvel took the Star Wars franchise back, but, yeah.
Now that you guys could be interesting. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm pumped for that. I think it's a miniseries. It's always interesting to see people try to reinvent or come up with a new sort of narrative for the Aliens franchise, because obviously most of the time, as I've said on the past podcast, it's either a group of people that are not capable of defending themselves absolutely being taken apart by aliens, or it's the Marines showing up and attempting to destroy the aliens, and that's pretty much it.
Right.
So anytime we have a chance at something different, let's see what it is.
Yeah. Well, for me, the two things I can think of, I know that Chew, I think, is going to be ending this year.
Oh, really?
So I believe that their last issue is going to be number 60, and they're on issue 54 comes out in January. So I'm assuming that if things go on track, and they've kind of had a very slow release schedule, and I only follow this book in trade, but I still catch it on the solicits. It should be ending this year, so that will be a very epic conclusion, which I'm very excited for. And the other thing I'm really pumped for is new Nowhere Man.
Yes, yes.
That starts this
absolutely.
Month.
Absolutely.
And they're going to have a new artist on it, but I really am just excited for a new Nowhere Man. Those are both from Image, and those are the two things I can think of offhand / I could Google while I was listening and responding to you guys. So, it's going to be exciting. Like this, you know, comics, you know, I think they're only getting better, right? We're in like a golden age of comics.
Absolutely.
I've heard other people say that. So 2016 looks to be pretty fun.
I should make a minor correction. It's Joe Harris, not Joe Casey, just so it's not like Nick White doesn't know his stuff. Well, you're right, and that's why
Joe Harris on
Snowfall.
Snowfall.
I was right
Snowfall.
In that sense. Yeah.
So, Kate, your series was called Snowblind, and Nick's
yep.
is called Snowfall. Okay,
yep.
Okay. Just to make sure that I had that clear in my head. Very cool.
We're also getting a new Miss Marvel or Captain Marvel. Sorry. This year?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're rebooting Captain Marvel, and it's with the creative team behind Agent Carter, the TV series.
Oh.
So that should be interesting. The preview art looks, and panels they gave us look cool. I really like the character redesign they did for her with her new outfit and hair and everything.
Is that the one that was from the previous series, correct? Or did they do a new character design for this series?
They did a new one. What was happening, the complaints were that it was really inconsistent of how she looked between books, because she's into some team books as well. And
okay.
So they went ahead and just did a new mock-up where they changed a few things, but basically they're going, this is Captain Marvel right now. This is across the books. This is what she's going to be. They gave her a much more military look. They, in interviews, have said this is, you know, she is a... what is she? I don't know, Air Force or whatever she is. She's a pilot. Yeah. And she's not going to have some long hair. It makes no sense. So they gave her a very workable outfit, realistic, which always makes me happy with female characters. She is not playing, you know, skin to win.
I've never heard of that. That's witty. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Fighting crime with sex appeal. so that makes me happy and excited about this book because Captain Marvel, some books in the past have been less friendly in that way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And these two women have been great with Agent Carter, making her completely badass without being, you know, completely sexist. So.
And that's always a plus, right?
Always a plus. Always a plus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of TV, actually, I'm really excited for the Luke Cage series that's going to be coming out this year.
Yes.
So I don't know if everyone's watched Jessica Carter. Jessica Jones, Luke Cage in that series was amazing, and he's getting his own show, and I'm super pumped about it. I don't want to say anything else other than that because I don't know anything else other than that. But that I love Luke Cage to death as a character, and I'm super excited for him to get a show. I can't say that enough.
I do wonder how they're going to... I don't know, how should I put this? Like, when you watched Daredevil, like, there was so little overlap with any of the other series, or there weren't, you know, breadcrumbs being left or whatnot to be picked up as much in Jessica Jones, but obviously Luke Cage played a large, large part in Jessica Jones, and I wonder how much of that overlap is going to consist, or going to take place in his book. And it also sort of makes you wonder, with, like, him being such a big part of the Jessica Jones narrative, is the Luke Cage narrative actually going to predate that, or what?
Well, he had a mysterious past, so you never know.
Yeah.
I love how, like, briefly they mention that in the show. They're like, she's like, what happened to you? And he's like, experiment. And he's like, what happened to you? And she's like, accident. And that's it. And I love that scene. That's just like, it's like, boom, that's it. Nothing else needs to be said. If you've read the comics, maybe you know more. If you haven't, that's all you need to know. Like,
Right. Well, and that begs the question of, you know, how much is Jessica Jones going to be in Luke Cage? And even bigger question, is Danny Rand going to show up in Luke Cage? You know, since they hinted at a little bit of, you know, Madame Gao in Daredevil, will she show up?
Stone in Daredevil,
you know,
as well,
part of
it,
you know. Yeah, so it's interesting. I'm curious to see how much overlap they will start to do with these shows now that there's like a definitive want for them.
Yeah.
Like they're saying, yes, we want more crossovers like this. Yes, we want more of these Marvel heroes depicted this way.
So it sounds like, do you guys consume, are you watching all these different superhero movies and TV shows and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm watching the Marvel stuff. I finished Jessica Jones. I watch Arrow and Flash, and I didn't watch Gotham, but yeah.
Oh, man. The only one I've watched is Jessica Jones. I've tried, like, an episode or two of everything else, and it just doesn't get me. I don't know. Like I said, TV is just not my thing, but...
No, that's understandable. I mean, Jessica Jones is really all you need to watch.
Right?
It's
amazing. But that's where, when they make these new shows, I'm always worried that it'll be too much tie-in stuff, because then that's where they lose me, if they have to watch other stuff that I'm not so into. Like, I tried Daredevil, I tried Flash and Arrow, and I'm just, ugh.
Oh, Flash and Arrow are so good. Okay, I won't do that.
Again, TV just doesn't do it, so I don't know.
Oh, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong about that. I mean, we're here to talk about comics anyway, so who
cares?
Right,
exactly.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast, a Destroy the Cyborg production. This episode was produced by Mike Rappin and edited by Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Lafayette Afro Rock Band, Daft Punk, Dot Phase, and Infinity Shred. If you're listening to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, we'd love it if you would take a quick moment to rate us. Your comments and ratings help others find the show, and let us know how we're doing. Otherwise, if you just want to say hi, you can email the show at cyborg@destroythecyb.org. Each email means a lot to us and lets us interact with all of you out there. Maybe you started reading a book we suggested. Maybe you have a suggestion for us. If email's not your game, feel free to shoot us a message on Twitter at @destroythecyb or through the hashtag #IReadComicBooks. You can also follow us on Tumblr at @destroythecyborg and check out our subreddit at ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. And again, thank you for listening.
Well, Wait, Marco Rudy's doing the interiors for Scarlet Witch number 2? Fuck. That sucks for my wallet. See, I was so invested for so long, and I'm like, I love all you guys so much. But I stopped. I mean, I dropped everything because of Secret Wars, so like I've been off the Marvel train for a little while.
I'm just going to say, fiscal responsibility is for punks, Mike. Don't worry about it.
Mike's like, I've got a whole bunch of spreadsheets that would disagree with you.
Exactly.
I can't believe they solicited Karnak number 4, and I don't think Karnak number 2 has come out. Unless it did and I didn't get it. Oh, it did come out. Well, whoops.
I'm really hoping that this new A-Force is actually a number 1 versus some of these new Marvel number 1s that don't explain anything and you're completely lost. Because I haven't read any A-Force yet, so...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. From the preview panels they gave us, I'm a little suspicious that I might not have a clue what's going on. But we'll see.
Yeah, that's the other part, right? So I dropped out of Marvel for a while, so I'm like, do I jump into these books not knowing what's happening, despite my talking like, oh, no, just roll with the punches, Mike.
Well, yeah, no, they're like, give us these things, and I'm all about setting up good jumping on points, because I'm, you know, jump on. But you got to make it a real jumping on point then. Jumped on with Extraordinary X-Men, number 1.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I had I had read volumes 1 and 2 of the X-Men before that, and so I was so confused.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, I'm so confused, and I haven't missed an issue of X-Men for like 5 years. So that's the thing, they're trying to do one of those what happened in the 8 months between Secret Wars and now.
Mm-hmm.
But they aren't, I don't think they did a good job in explaining that a bunch of time had passed, or that I don't know, like if you read Uncanny X-Men 600, like I said this on the episode we did the podcast, but like I read Uncanny X-Men 600, and I was like, okay, cool, everything's better. And then you jump into Extraordinary X-Men, he's like, nope, Cyclops is dead, and he did something really bad.
So are we supposed to have known what he did? Like, was that in the comic I missed, or no?
No, you aren't supposed to know anything. But, like, they don't make it seem that way.
Yeah, I totally just assumed I missed something in books I didn't read.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, the problem that they had in the issue was that they didn't have a character who was supposed to be recognizable by the audience,
mm-hmm.
right? In the sense that they didn't know what was going on. So everyone was like, yeah, after Cyclops did that bad thing, there wasn't even a character that was like, wait, what bad thing did he do? I was in a coma.
Right.
Like, even if they did something like that, that would have filled in the gaps.
Yeah,
or at least would have said, like, even this guy doesn't know, or this girl doesn't know, and she's going to figure it out.
It has gotten really crazy. It's like, I was trying to explain to my friend this scene that I really liked, and I'm like, so we have, like, the past, Jean Grey is talking to future Logan, and they're, like, talking about this thing that I'm not sure what really happened. And, it just gets weird.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was like, and you complained that my anime is too weird. And I'm like, right. Listen, your anime is weird.
Oh, man. Yep. Okay. You are totally right.